All right. Thank you, Andy Schechtman, for being on the show of
Pleasure.
Yeah. And your site is Miles Franklin. So while people are listening, you can check out milesfranklin.com. It's just Miles Franklin, just like it sounds.com. And thanks for being on the show once again. And your story is really, I think you've defined it as an American success story. So can we find out just a little bit about you and the creation of Miles Franklin?
Yeah, well, we started 34 years ago. I mean, I think you could argue it is kind of emblematic of an American dream. My father's middle name is Miles. His best friend who lent us the money in 1989, his middle name was Franklin. And we started in a one-room office the size of a closet on a wing and a prayer, I guess you could say. Our main focus at the time was Swiss investments. We were the U.S. contact for the Swiss insurance industry, and that really took off. There were some people in the industry who are to this day very well known, like Doug Casey and at the time Gary North and other Richard Mayberry newsletter writers back then. That was what people did. They actually read newsletters instead of listening to podcasts back then. And they promoted us. And we realized very quickly that the same person who bought Swiss francs bought precious metals. And so from a very, very, very modest, humble beginning in a tiny little office, we just are on the cusp of clearing $10 billion in sales without a customer complaint in 34 years. It's something that I have a hard time even contemplating myself often, and something I'm obviously quite proud of. But that's pretty much it. Through hard work and relationships and really being accountable and accessible, we reached levels I never thought we would have. But, you know, along the way, I learned something very important. And I think if we, at least in terms of how it reflects our discussion tonight, I think people should understand the way that I look at gold and silver. I was barely 20 years old when I started this company. My father at the time told me that there would be one rule that he would impose upon me if we, you know, undertook this endeavor together. And being nearly 20, I could say, yeah, okay, I can deal with one rule. What's that? He said, you'll buy something every 2 weeks. I won't let you make the same mistakes I made as a younger man. And I said, well, okay, if that's the only rule, I got to buy some gold or silver when I get paid every 2 weeks, I can deal with that. I've owned the company outright for almost 2 decades. He's been retired, but he won't fire me anymore, but I've honored my promise to him. And for 34 years, I've never missed a 2 week period in buying something. I don't care if it's 1 ounce of silver, but the idea, and it's the best gift he's ever given me, the best gift anyone's ever given me. And that is to learn how to let the laws of compounding work for you instead of against you, in this case, time. And honoring my word and paying myself first and being methodical, whether you're an athlete or someone who's working out or anything. Success comes with a plan, with being methodical, with being regimented. And in this case, paying yourself first, no matter how small a payment, but to prioritize it, to allow you to find your way out of the rat race. And I'll tell you, you know, I still feel like I'm 20 years old in many respects in my head, but you wake up, you know, 34 years later and, you know, where'd all the time go? And, yes. And here I am, someone who fully believes in little by little, you know, and that's a great way to accumulate it when you can, but be methodical and look at it as wealth. So for me, it's not an investment. And I just look at it as my wealth that if I never need to use, you know, I give it to my kids. And in a form that has not only intrinsic but sentimental value as well, and has been wealth for 5,000 years. And if I do need it, I'm damn glad I have it. In the world that we live in these days, who knows? So I guess as we go forward through this discussion, just understand that to me, this is not an investment. This is not to become, you know, wealthy. If you own enough of it, you will be, but it is wealth. And I just think that that's important as we go through discussions about what gold is. To me, it's wealth that's outlived everything that the world has ever thrown at it for 5,000 years. And here we are today.
Yeah, and I remember on Natalie Brunell's podcast, you mentioned that you were in a third gold, a third silver, and a third Bitcoin.
Well, no, I'm not. I mean, I did mention that what I said is that as of late, I have been adding Bitcoin, a third gold, third. So I'm a very, very, very late adopter to Bitcoin. But what I am is someone who is open-minded and thinks that things don't need to be mutually exclusive of one another. And so in my bi-monthly purchases, no matter what they are, I will put a little bit into Bitcoin. I don't want to look back at the end and say, damn it, I knew I should at least dip my toe in the water after all of those years of being in finance and in contrarian finance at that. And it kind of bothers me, actually, that the Bitcoin community and the precious metals community are often at odds. I think they should be very symbiotic and complementary and make a portfolio stronger having allocations to both, no matter what side you're on. And I think it's naive to become married to your own story so much that you don't have an open mind, whether or not, wherever you view it in the financial pyramid, the base of it, the middle portion, or the top tip where that's most speculative, doesn't matter. But I figure having a little allocation to it. So yes, I did say that. I said I have been doing that. But you know, I saw Natalie and Mark in Vancouver just a few months ago. So this is a relatively new phenomenon and something I'm not embarrassed to admit. But it's certainly a very, very small percentage of my assets.
Yeah, and Mark Moss, actually, he's been on this podcast before, so he's a friend of the show. And well, it does seem like global uncertainty is finding security right now in gold and silver. And I would ask, do you feel confident in dollars?
No, not even a little bit. I mean, I think when you realize we're a country that is accumulating $1 trillion in debt every 90 days, right around the same amount of time, we accumulate $100 billion in interest payments that keep going higher. You could argue we are a superpower in terminal decline. We are at the cusp of being 130% debt to GDP. I don't know that there's ever been a country that's come back from that once you cross over that Rubicon, and we're real close to it. We have a $34 trillion debt. A trillion seconds ago was 31,688 years ago. But we have 150 trillion or so in unfunded liabilities. Social Security alone is 77 trillion underfunded. Medicare, Medicaid, government military pensions. The Congressional Budget Office, which is the last nonpartisan entity in Washington, said by 2031, 100% of tax revenue will go just to pay the interest on the debt and the mandatory entitlement payments like Social Security. And that means, I mean, if you take it backwards, I mean, how the hell does a country remain a dominant military and financial superpower when 100% of discretional spending, which includes military, would have to be borrowed? I mean, it's crazy as it is right now. If you think about it, we are broke. We are insolvent. We're the largest debtor nation in the world. And yet everyone keeps coming to us for money. Let's just give money to all these people, but we got to borrow it to do so. It's so insane if you think about it logically as a household or a family member where you're broke, you got nothing. Your liabilities are way many times greater than your assets and your family keeps asking you for money. So sure, you just take out another credit card and borrow it and lend it to them. I mean, the absurdity of it is crazy. And, you know, my big focus really over the last 4 years has been the dollar's role as the petrodollar. And it just seems like it's coming to an end. And I mean, that's in thousands of videos I've done since 2019. It's been my main focus, the value of the dollar, largely because of the way that we have weaponized it. It is really, I think, on its way down, ultimately. And, you know, when you add into it the massive indebtedness and the Federal Reserve that is caught between a rock and a hard place, if they raise rates, well, they blow up the system. If they lower rates, they signal inflation the way that all politicians have since the beginning of time. They will never choose austerity over inflation. They will never blow up their balance sheet or try to normalize it, which would blow up, in essence, the economy as rates rise and all of the indebtedness and, you know, record indebtedness in mortgage debt, in credit card debt, in personal debt. How about the largest asset of the United States, this bankrupt country, $150, $60 trillion in debt. The largest asset is student debt. That is the asset on the 2022 balance sheet. I don't know if you can find the 23 yet, but it was 40%+ of the assets of this bankrupt country. And you have all this record debt. And as rates rise, it only becomes far more difficult to maintain. So the Fed is trapped. So ultimately, I think if your wealth is held in dollars, you're destined to go broke, truthfully. And if you're not a contrarian, I think you're destined to be a victim. And I say that to you. I mean, I can go deep into this if you want, but I say this to you that anyone in their right mind would, I mean, when we go around and we go into Brazil, to the backyard of the BRICS, Janet Yellen, our Treasury Secretary, and tell Brazil and the whole world that, you know, it's not our intention it's not enough to sanction Russian assets. We need to confiscate them. And so does the European Union and the UK, and use them to fund the Ukrainian war. She just 3 days ago gave an interview with CNBC from the Too Stupid to Be Stupid category. And she says they're prepared to sanction Chinese banks, companies, as well as Beijing itself, if they aid Russia in military aid in any way. And yet we're able to do this with Ukraine, right? We can do it, but they can't. And she says it's very funny when you talk about why the world views us as being hypocritical. China is entitled, she says, to have a relationship with Russia. Well, thank you, Madam Secretary. She said nothing that much of the trade between the two countries is seen by the U.S. as non-problematic, but the provision of military aid from Beijing to Moscow will trigger sanctions. So now she's threatening China with sanctions. And these countries have no interest in being beholden to a country they view as hypocritical, a country that is insolvent, a country that has lost its bearing socially, morally, politically, open borders, lawlessness, you know, questions surrounding the elections and the Justice Department, you know, woke mentality that is sept through the entire system, in through schooling all the way up into the highest levels of government. Cancel culture. I mean, you name it. No unity, divisiveness. This is not the country I remember. I still think it. Thank God I live here and for the opportunities it presented to me. But just the fact that the elections and the justice system and the Justice Department are questioned by most of the world to some degree is enough to make you wonder what the hell is going on. And 12 million people in this country illegally, those numbers the Congressional Budget Office offered you are, don't take into account the 12 million people that came in here. And last night, we get the joy of watching on the evening news them yelling death to America as they're saying this from, you know, an office building in New York. And I mean, where the hell do we live anymore? And if 1% of these people want to cause problems, just like these people saying death to the United States, that's 120,000 people. How about 3%? That's 360,000 people. That's a standing army. We're being invaded. I mean, you can call it what you want, but all of these things put together make me say, hell no, do I want to feel safe holding dollars, not to mention a banking system that's massively over-leveraged and undercapitalized. And most people, probably people listening to this show, have no idea what bail-ins are and how they were written into law in the Dodd-Frank Act. And a bail-in basically says if a bank fails, you are an unsecured general creditor. And they will take your money, anything over the fraudulent FDIC limit of $250,000 or $500,000 per couple. I say fraudulent because they have $128 billion in assets backing $18 trillion in deposits. But if anything over that amount is bailed into the bank, it's gone. It's used to make the bank solvent. And, you know, when Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank failed, they were bailed out illegally. And this created a big hullabaloo, a big problem. And you know, Treasury Secretary Yellen once again told the congressional meeting or the hearing, told the senator from Oklahoma that no, sir, your bank in Oklahoma will not be bailed out the way these two banks were. If a regional bank fails, we viewed these banks as systemic to the whole system, and it took an uber majority vote of the Federal Reserve, the FOMC, the FDIC, myself, and the president. And well, we bailed them out, but don't expect this to happen in the future. And the other banks that have failed so far have been gobbled up by the likes of JP Morgan or other big regional banks. But let me tell you something. It was written into law that if a bank fails, bailouts are illegal, like they were in the 2008 financial crisis, where we paid all that money to these banks. You can't do that anymore. There will be a bail-in. Something will happen to trigger a panic in this country. And I think holding your money completely and totally in dollars is absolutely insanity right now. And I say that as someone who thanks God, like I said, every day that I was born in this country, I'm a patriot. I'm just completely devastated and saddened by what I see happening around me, if you want to know the truth.
Yeah, and that's something that I think is important, and a lot of people don't quite get it, is that being a contrarian right now is actually being patriotic, because, you know, I certainly do love America. I'm, you know, America AF. I certainly am. You know, I was in the military when I was a youngster and such. And, but I'm not, but with that said, I'm not going to be blind to the reality that for quite a while, you know, one of America's number one exports has been misery. Right. And the dollar has been a big part of that. And so is the SWIFT system. And that I don't think most Americans know, like, for one thing, well, the new NPR CEO gave a TED talk asserting truth is a distraction. And I think, and it was his TED talk, and she's just talking about how, you know, consensus reality that they dictate, you know, through their moderators is more important than truth. Truth is just a distraction. Truth can be no more than an opinion. It can't actually have a reality. There's no such thing as empirical research.
Well, these days, yeah, it's more of a conspiracy theory than anything. And there is a fine line between conspiracy and reality, I would argue. But you're right. I mean, the narrative is what is being pushed out by the media that's controlled by four companies. If you put all of the media and the radio and the internet, I mean, not the internet, but the radio and the magazines and the newspapers, it's all for a handful of companies that control the narrative.
Yeah, they control the narrative, and that's the thing. I think it's very unfortunate that people don't necessarily know what's going on. So I do think that's very important, that, you know, being a contrarian definitely is an aspect of, I think, being very American, and also your own survival and your community's survival, your family's survival, and the country's survival. So I think that definitely it's important, and there's nothing that I think deludes that, like woke culture and cancel culture, etc., because all truth now is a conspiracy theory. It's more whatever the moderators, you know, dictate is the truth. So one of the things about a dollar, about gold and silver, and I would, you know, touch on Bitcoin, but, you know, specifically gold and silver, is that this is one thing I know people who find a little bit of difficulty with, and because there's a great podcast called Fall of Civilizations. If one hasn't watched it, they can just look on YouTube for Fall of Civilizations, and it's the most amazing presentations by this guy. And he talks about, like, previous civilizations, their end. It almost sounds depressing, but it's actually very empowering. And when you look at our reality right now in the West, we're in the fall of civilization, I think. A good chance that's the case, maybe not, but you definitely can thrive. I mean, you can be okay. So I think that's one of the things I know I'm very curious about and I'm working on, is how, if this is a fall of Western civilization, like if the dollar won't be the reserve currency, if the BRICS do create standardized currencies or a standardized currency, they're already trading in means other than the dollar between themselves. I mean, there is a real war on the dollar, without a doubt. And right. I think most people, they don't take it seriously. They just go, oh, you get, but the BRIC nations want to be done with it. And so with all that's going on, what would you tell a person who feels nervous about, well, they see their bank account, they see the dollars, and you say, well, you know what, maybe monthly, maybe weekly, you know, buy some gold and silver. Your money hasn't gone anywhere. It's gone from nothing to wealth. But seeing that account balance go down a little bit, and even though you're getting the physical gold and silver, it makes people nervous. It seems like there's just something that a threshold a person has to get over before they feel confident every time they buy metals, rather than like they're a little bit more broke.
I mean, look, gold and silver are assets that are not simultaneously someone else's liability. So you take all of the counterparty risk out of the equation. This is the reason that the central banks are buying it. They would rather own gold instead of U.S. treasuries. Not only has gold outperformed every single, you take Bitcoin out of the equation, all right? Let's just take that out of the equation. It's outperformed every single asset since the beginning turn of the century. And, you know, it's up on average 9.1%, I believe, compounding since 2000. And the S&P is just over 7%. And you know, the bond market is a fraction of that. But it offers an asset that is not There is no counterparty risk with it. There is no default risk. There is no sanctioning risk or confiscation risk if you're another country thinking about what you can do with the U.S. Treasury bond that for the first time in 45 years last year was more volatile than the 10-year Treasury was in the price of gold. And that, you know, there's no counterparty risk with it. And if you look at what we're doing in sanctioning Iran, sanctioning Russia, sanctioning, now threatening to sanction China, all the you know, these G7 countries go around and with you know, instead of cooperation, it's coercion. And if you don't do what we do, it doesn't matter what we can do whatever we want. We can give money to the Ukraine, but you can't give money to Russia or help them at all, or we're going to sanction you. Well, these countries are like, screw you. You know, we're going to divest of dollars. We're going to trade with one another until we come up with our own currency, which, you know, they will. And I'll talk to you about something here in a second.
Yes.
But they will also, what they've been doing lately, instead of, you know, at the end of the meeting in October or in August in Johannesburg, where everyone thought, Jim Rickards thought that they would issue a common currency, and I think he'll be right. They will. I mean, Sergei Glazyev has been saying for 3 years, so have I, that they're going to issue a common currency. They will. But until then, what they have been doing is they task the finance ministers to go back to the drawing board, come back to, you know, to the drawing board, come back to the meeting in October in Russia and present your findings. In the meantime, they said, let's all trade in local currencies. And you're seeing that. You're seeing, yes, for example, China trade with Brazil and buy their corn and their soybeans instead of from the U.S. farmers. They're buying them from Brazil and paying for it in yuan, which is immediately convertible into gold, which is the world's only other tier one reserve asset, which the central banks have been gobbling up hand over fist for the last 3 years. And it was reclassified tier one in 2019, the biggest probably event of my career. Why doesn't the media tell us that it's the U.S. dollar, the U.S. Treasury, and gold? Those are your three tier one assets from a central bank status. You don't hear about any of this stuff. And so this is why the central banks are gobbling it up. But that gold, or those yuan that they receive for their corn or their soybeans, are immediately convertible into gold for delivery on the Shanghai Gold Exchange. Iran has been doing that for years, selling oil to China for yuan, or the petro yuan bond, either or, which are convertible into gold on the Shanghai Gold Exchange. And you see a deal with China and Iran just a few months ago, they won a job to modernize their biggest airport, paying for it in oil. And so all of these deals are no longer settling in the dollar, which is chipping away at the settlement status of the dollar. And because of what I was saying with the weaponizing, these countries have been selling bonds. Look at China's numbers. They're down to $700 or $800 billion from almost $3 trillion. And, you know, Russia and sold all their bonds. Saudi Arabia, they've been shedding their, all these countries are selling bonds. Japan, and they're buying gold because it has no counterparty risks. There is no sanctioning risk. And that chips away at the reserve status. And, you know, these things are happening very quickly. But I want to read something to you. Yes. You know, it's important to understand that they understand what's going on with our markets. And, you know, there was an article that just came out where a man named Yuri Ushakov, he works at the Kremlin, said exactly what I just said and have been saying for 3 years, that indeed they are working on a common settlement currency. And indeed it will be based on two baskets, one basket of common currencies of those countries involved in the process, kind of like a special drawing rights from the International Monetary Fund. And the other basket will be that of commodities, mostly gold. What is gold? The only other tier one asset in the world. Who's been buying it all? Oh yeah, those guys. And we've known all that. I've said this 1,000 times in over 1,000 videos. And then he also said, which is what we've been saying for a long time, that it will be digital. Now, we just saw the Project Enbridge. This came out over a year ago. It was developed between China and United Arab Emirates, who just joined BRICS, and I think Singapore. And, you know, it allows cross-border settlement, sidestepping the SWIFT in digital currencies. They just did the first ever gold purchase using digital yuan on Project Enbridge. And SWIFT is out of the equation. So he said that it will be a digital currency, you know, and it can be used without the banking system and much cheaper than the SWIFT system and much more, you can't be sanctioned. But all of that we know. The part that's very interesting is what he said next. And he said, the second part is price. He said, for the moment, price is determined by Western speculation, where we produce these commodities and consume them, but we do not have our own price mechanism, which will balance supply and demand. It is impossible to make any strategic planning for economic development if you do not control prices of basic commodities. Here's the kicker. Price formation with this new currency should get rid of the Western exchanges of commodities. So they understand exactly what's happening, and they understand that we've been suppressing the price of gold, and they've been using it against us by accumulating everything that is not nailed down, everything that is not nailed down. They've been draining the exchanges for a very long time. They've been taking massive deliveries. And now you're seeing arbitrage in Shanghai, where the price of gold is, $50 higher than it is in the West, and silver's $3 higher, 10%. Mm. And so they're incentivizing the traders who have the ability to buy in London and in Chicago and deliver in Shanghai. This is happening little by little by little. They are the largest producers. They are the largest accumulators. They understand what it represents. And they're using the leverage of the system against us. They just developed the BRICS Grain Exchange. Same thing. They say global prices are determined by the Chicago Commodity Exchange. Moscow and the BRICS seeks to move away from trading grain for U.S. dollars in favor of national currencies of BRICS member states. That's exactly what's happening. China just canceled a huge grain contract with Australia and the United States. They're buying it from Russia. They're going to accept ruble. And that this is a deal that's going on now, where the settlement status of the dollar is being massively, chopped at the knees. And then instead of taking all of this excess money that would have been in dollars that are not, and they're not putting them into treasuries anymore, they're buying commodities. And I think it's just beginning. In fact, the Chinese bought the London Metals Exchange a few years ago. That's not the LBMA, where precious metals are traded. The LME is where all the base metals are traded, like copper and zinc and lead and steel. Well, they bought that, and now they're warehousing a lot of those metals that are traded in London in China. So they're striking deals around the world agriculturally. They're building the Belt Road Initiative, which is the largest infrastructure project the world has ever seen, connecting right now 75% of human population and 50% of global GDP, and doing it in a cooperative manner where they build oil refineries and roads and bridges and maritime channels and gold and silver mines, and they take a cut. But they're building an infrastructure with these under-industrialized third world countries and giving them industrialization, giving them wealth, and doing it cooperatively. All of this stuff is happening, and people don't have any idea what's going on. And they are accumulating all of the world's commodities. I mean, literally, the BRICS countries right now already, when you add just the 10 that are there, now control the majority of oil and natural gas production. They control more, they produce more wheat than the United States, North America does. They have the majority of all the rare earth metals in the Eurasian continent used for batteries. Haven't thought that one out real well. And they control the entire Red Sea and the Straits of Hormuz. I mean, all of these shipping lanes and all of the commodities and all of the larger swath of human population, by far, three of the four largest nuclear arsenals, by far a bigger percentage of global GDP right now. All of this stuff is happening, and the West is worried about nonsense. And they are using the suppression of these markets that we have done for a very long time to support a bond market, to support the illusion of prosperity and strength against us. And they're emptying the shelves. So yeah, I think it's just beginning, brother. And I think here's what I mean by, if you're not a contrarian, you will end up a victim. And you can see that not by what the mainstream is telling you, because they don't just do a bad job, but they do no job of telling you. Just look at what's happening right here underneath us, and you see the majority of human population moving in this direction away from the West.
Yeah. And that's the thing where you've got, especially as we call it, a rules-based world order, rather than a law-based world order. So if you piss off America in any way, you may have done something right. I mean, it's just, it's rules, and we change them. We create them, we make them
there
up.
There are rules, that's right. Yeah,
the rules. Right. Yeah, it's not a law, it's a rule, And we actually ignore laws. So anyway, it's like with the frozen assets of Russia. So
people, that's look at the rallying cry that's bringing them all together. It's the commodities and transparency, a marriage of commodities and blockchain, in my opinion, that gives it a shot at giving it the glue that makes it all work.
And I don't think that people don't necessarily always realize how big of a deal the frozen Russian assets are, because the whole world, especially the BRIC nations, just went, we can't be in that system. Because if we break their rules, which they may make one up tomorrow, that we have no choice, it's not in our best interest to break it. I mean, like I say, I love my America, but, you know, I do have to be a realist and just realize that, you know, a rules-based world order is not necessarily a good thing. And the SWIFT system and the dollar, I think the BRIC nations, how can I blame them for wanting to get away from it? Because, you know, you piss us off, we'll freeze your assets.
No, but, you know, we gave back the assets to Iran, but now they're talking about confiscating them to give to the Ukraine. She actually had the nerve to say this in Brazil a few weeks ago, literally. So we need to, us, the European Union and United Kingdom need to confiscate these assets. It's not enough to sanction and freeze, but we need to confiscate. So that's stealing. There will never be another country, especially in the Southern Hemisphere, that will ever touch us, trust us ever, ever again. And that's why I almost think it's too stupid to be stupid. It's got to be designed. And it's interesting when you take a step back and realize the lead economic advisor of the United States government is a man named Jared Bernstein. His entire thesis is to lose the world reserve status. It is a privilege we can no longer afford. He wrote reports that were picked up in the New York Times called Dethrone King Dollar, where he advocates for this. And when Trump slapped tariffs on China, he said, great, maybe we'll lose our reserve status now. So, I mean, you want to lose the reserve status. First, you sign an executive order to go green, which kills the linchpin of the dollar hegemony, our relationship with Saudi Arabia and OPEC. And then you weaponize the dollar, say, if you are not aligned with us, you piss us off, or you just step out of line, well, we're going to sanction. And now we're even talking about a confiscation into China. Yeah, we don't care that you're friends with Russia, but if you give them any aid, well, we're going to sanction you too. Don't worry about us giving aid to the Ukraine, you know, because we make the rules in this rules-based order. And then you let the country that we all, that you fought for or went to the military for, go to shit, where, you know, open borders and lawlessness and beating up cops in broad daylight and in Times Square and, you know, are the elections fair? Is the Justice Department equal? Or is Lady Liberty really not blindfolded? Does she have one eye open? Is she is two-tier? All of this stuff, you know, and I don't know. It's almost like they're trying to destabilize the country from within and from without. And instead of hanging on and gripping to the privilege of and the exorbitant privilege of being the world reserve currency, we're pissing in the punch bowl and doing everything we can to make everyone mad and say, what the hell do we want? That's not even the country that everyone ascribes to go to. You know, the kids who grew up wanting Levi's jeans and listening to rock and roll and watching, you know, movies from Hollywood. That's all people wanted, was to come here. And you wonder, is that even the thought anymore? I played golf the other day with a guy from Morocco and a very successful money manager. He said, I didn't come to here for this shit. I didn't come here in 2005 for this. He said, it was amazing when I got here in 05, and it's gone downhill ever since. This is a guy that came from, you know, from another country. And it was interesting listening to say this stuff. And I left Minnesota, even though my corporate entity is still there. I moved to Florida, where I've had an office for 15 years, a second satellite office that a friend of mine opened up on behalf of my company. And I moved, voted with my feet when they lost their mind and led the nation in defunding the police. And instead of, you know, having a respectful relationship with law enforcement, it became so adversarial that, you know, now it's hard to get anyone to be a cop, and you can't blame them. All of this stuff is just so surreal that when you talk about what are the ramifications of this all happening, look, if Saudi Arabia and the rest of OPEC say we're not going to take dollars for oil anymore, I mean, United Arab Emirates just said it. They're the seventh largest producer of oil in the world. They just joined BRICS alongside of Saudi Arabia. They are an OPEC member. We don't want dollars anymore. Well, Iran and Russia aren't taking it either. What if they say that? We've just joined the BRICS. They have a bigger military. They're not going green. When you add the Belt Road Initiative, which has every OPEC country on it, all of them. You know, we're talking 80 plus 90% of human population. You add in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization and the Eurasian Economic Union. I've been saying for 4 years that they will all join together. So did Jim Rickards recently, and so did the president of Belarus, who said they need to join the BRICS. You're talking 90% of human population and the majority of everything that you need to build a country or an empire, rather. all the natural resources, all the human population and the shipping routes. And there's 36 countries that have formally applied to BRICS and another 20 yep. on top of the 10, another 20 plus that have informally. This is growing in mass, in legitimacy, in scope, in speed, in formidability. And all of the naysayers and the dollar bulls and the people who live in a world where, you know, recency bias prevails, I get it. The term little logarithmic decay, little by little by little by little, then all at once. It's like going over the cliffs or over the waterfall. People are naysayers about the little by little. It takes too long. Instant gratification in this country
yes.
is too fast, not fast enough. Whereas, you know, BRICS has been going on for 17 years. It's now accelerating. They do things plotted and methodical and thought out. But that little by little is ignored. And typically in macro cycles, you know, when you get to the end of the cycle, people can't believe that it will ever end. You know, it's just like the party never ends, right? And they hang on too long. And they are naysayers because it takes too long. And then freak out at how fast the all at once really did happen. So I think that's kind of where we are in the scheme of things. This little by little by little by little by little has been going on for years now. If you open your eyes and see that the de-dollarization and the move away from the petrodollar, in particular by Saudi Arabia, and the relationships they've struck, and the rise of the Belt Road and the rise of the BRICS and the legitimacy behind it all, it's not to be ignored. And too many people are naysayers because, well, you know, the dollar is the best currency and the bond market is the most liquid. Yeah, bull crap. The bond market, mm-hmm. if you are on the wrong side, it gets taken from you. That's why they're buying gold, because they can't take it from you. And it has a much longer history, 5,000-year history of being an asset and wealth versus a tiny little blip on the radar in historical respect of a country's debt being an asset. And the dollars, well, they've chosen inflation over austerity, that's for sure, in my opinion. And so, times are a-changing, and either you roll with them and have an open mind, or quite frankly, you can very easily get rolled by them.
Yeah, and I saw an article linked to, it was on Zero Hedge, and nobody wants U.S. Treasury bonds. And I'm starting to see articles like that now where other countries, well, they've sold them, like you mentioned, and they also don't want them. And like, how does that affect our economy when nobody wants your bonds anymore?
We're a country that's spending, going into $1 trillion in debt every quarter.
Yeah.
So if they're not going to finance our debt, who will? You know, we're supposed to believe that Cayman Islands is like number two or three in the world in our holding of treasuries. Really, I got some oceanfront property in Minneapolis to sell you. If you don't think that's probably the Federal Reserve in a shell account in the Cayman Islands, this leads to monetization of debt, where mm-hmm. central bank prints money to buy the bonds because no one else wants any duration whatsoever in our bonds. You know, 6 months paying 5%, okay. 10 years, yeah, and I don't think so. 30 years? Are you kidding me? And so yeah. Who's going to pay for it? You know, a country that's lost its way and is insolvent nearly, and is pissing everybody off. No one. And so they sell bonds and instead they buy gold. And those treasuries have to be that spending, that excess. You know, here's the thing, you know, who's all the debt owed to? Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and government military pensions. That's owed to us, $150 trillion. And with all the countries selling bonds, yeah, they still own some, but who's been buying all the bonds lately? Oh, that's us too. The hedge funds, the money markets, the traders, the people chasing yield. So if this really is a Klaus Schwab setup where you weaponize the dollar, you sign an executive order to go green, you piss off the world, you make the inside of the country completely unstable, let all these people in, the record level of debt, lowest level of savings, 65% of the country paycheck to paycheck, 45% earning six figures or more paycheck to paycheck. And then you incentivize OPEC to say, hey, listen, thanks for the memories, guys. You know, the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia recently said that China was their most important trading partner last year and for the next 50. Those words were very well thought out. It was 50 years ago we signed the petro deal. So if that indeed is the case, and they say, look, we're now part of all of my brothers and sisters on OPEC are part of Belt Road Initiative. Most of us are in BRICS. We're in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. That is the largest regional military and financial group in the world, on top of being, you know, in the BRICS, three of the four largest nuclear arsenals. You're talking the majority of human population, and we're all not going green. You guys are. We appreciate it. And look, we don't like what you've done with weaponizing the dollar. We mean no disrespect, but we're no longer going to take dollars for oil. Bang, that fast. Every country in the world's had to own it. Stockpile dollars to buy oil. 90% of all oil sales globally have been in dollars. So every country now dumps those dollars. And it hits our shore, creates hyperinflation. I mean, we're swarmed, overwhelmed with all of those dollars that have been accumulated for all this time. And the byproduct of that is interest rates that have to spike to compensate for the loss of purchasing power. When that happens, think about it. Stocks, bonds, real estate, the dollar, the banking system, and the insurance companies all vaporize.
Yes. Like
that. And it's those sons of bitches who did it to us. It's not, you know, my mentor, Richard Russell, always said 20 years ago, they've crossed the line. They have to inflate or die. Inflate or default. One or the other. They have no other option. That was with half the debt they had on their balance sheet. And now, you know, how about option three? Find a villain. And what does our lead economic advisor want? Oh, yeah, he doesn't want the world reserve currency anymore. And how do you do that? Well, you pull away the linchpin of the hegemony, the petro status. You piss everyone off and make them dump dollars because you think they're going to be sanctioned and confiscated. You destabilize the country. You create all this debt. The banks are over leveraged and undercapitalized. And you lose the petro status, and bang. And they did it to us. And now that's option three. You got a villain that resets the whole system. But don't worry. Have no fear. Lael Brainard is here. And she's the number two at the U.S. Economic policy at the White House. She was at the Treasury for a while. She was number two underneath Powell at the Fed. And if God help us all, this current administration stays in there another 4 years, we're in big trouble, but she'll be the head of the Federal Reserve. And she's a modern monetary theorist. She ran point for Fed Now that just came out about six months ago or so. It's the Venmo on steroids backed by the Fed. It's being piloted right now, and it would by most people think it will take over for checks and wires. And then she also worked with MIT in developing the CBDC that Biden fast-tracked by executive order. So, you know, sign on the dotted line will make you whole. Don't worry about the fact that your bank and your insurance company and, you know, all of everything is collapsed. Sign on the dotted line, take the CBDC, because after all the debt owed to? Most of it to us. And so it's a whole lot easier to blame those sons of bitches for doing it to us instead of falling on the sword for brain dead monetary policy and ridiculous, just grotesque fiscal policy where we are addicted like a heroin addict to spending. And this stuff is all happening. And, you know, everything I said up to this point is fact. Now, will there be the Great Reset where they dump dollars and the whole system collapses and we blame them? And will that then be the foray into the CBDC? Because no one wants to take it. I'm not taking that thing everyone says. You mean to tell me if I lose $50 playing golf to my buddy, it's on the ledger? If I if I go buy a 12-pack of beer and a pack of cigarettes, it's on the ledger? I mean, no one wants it. But what if you're forced to take it? Then you're forced to, because you've lost everything. But so is everyone else, because the whole system collapsed and they did it to us. And I think there would be more people that would say, yeah, I'll take it. I mean, I need to feed my family and, you know, I'll take it. Now, that's all that part all there is supposition. But ask yourself, I mean, how far-fetched is it when the lead economic advisor is indeed a man who wants to lose the reserve status? And number two, is indeed a modern monetary theorist who advocates for a central bank digital currency. And with that being said, I mean, if we were a country that really wanted to keep our act together, we certainly would have no questions surrounding our elections or our border or our Justice Department. We would not have lawlessness in our cities, and we would respect authority. We could question it, but we would respect it. And we sure as hell would give people opportunity, equal opportunity based upon merit and nothing else. And then, you know, squander away the world reserve status. So all of these things, how far-fetched is it? I don't know. But this is why it's important to own gold and silver, because it's one of the few things that's outside the matrix. But who's accumulating it? not only the wealthiest people in the world, but the most well-informed, the central banks. And that's all you really need to know. They're telling you, we're buying it and we know the playbook. And if you don't see it, then you're missing out on a once in a generation opportunity, as you said, not just to survive, but maybe even thrive.
Yeah. Well, one thing about the CBDC is anybody who doubts that possibility, I don't think they know how every financial transaction you make is analyzed. I mean, we think, oh, well, when the CBDC happens, then they'll be analyzing every financial transaction. They'll be able to see it. Well, they're doing that now to an extreme. I would just say, you know, not saying I have insider info. I just, every transaction you make that's digital is analyzed the crap out of in many different ways. And so they're watching us. And so the thing about the weaponization of the dollar, it's not just out there. It's in here, and within the borders as well. And I sometimes wonder if the CBDC wouldn't just be an excuse to use all that data they've already gathered. You know, it's just, okay, now we have a cover story. I don't know. But yeah, the CBDC, it would only be, in my opinion, for the most part, doing what's already done in private, somewhat covertly doing it in public. So what's overt becomes covert. And yeah, you know, you didn't pay taxes on that $50 you wanted to bet, and they're coming after you. You know, you, and of course, if it truly is, if they can just turn you off, deperson you until you, you know, get your social credit score up, well, all the framework and technology is already there.
Well, they can. There's a lady named Nomi Prince who I have the privilege of seeing each year when I speak at the Rural Symposium in here in Boca, and she came out with a hell of a report last year, and in it was a memorandum she got through the Freedom of Information Act that the IRS, it was an internal memo that or document that wasn't really for public release, but in it it analyzed the CBDC and said, you know, just what you said, even though we wouldn't do this, you could suspend, cancel, revoke, do all of these things. You know, you didn't get a shot. What are you doing out at the grocery store? You know, your account is frozen in authority. I mean, there are very punitive things that could be done on a programmable currency, certainly. And, you know, even before that, there was a gal at the Fed, and I forgot her name. I guess it really doesn't matter. But in it, you know, she said with the real reason they want to do this is monetary policy. If they want it to there to be inflation, the Fed can say, we've put $10,000 in everyone's account and it must be spent by Christmas and it has to be spent on retail stuff only or whatever. And it, then at the end of that time, it's gone. So they can inject money into the system. And she said, even though it's controversial, she was a main gal at the Fed, even though it's controversial, if we had it to slow down the system, we could pull liquidity out of people's accounts. I mean, you cross that line, you don't come back from it in terms of privacy, and you know, you control the money that way. You control everything. Yeah. People's ability to eat or to drive or to pay bills, or, I mean, that's it. So it's a scary proposition for sure.
Well, you mentioned that, I forget what percent you mentioned, but people who are making six figures or more are living paycheck.
45% of those
45%. So that's the thing. You know, I live in not that expensive an area, maybe a bit, Scottsdale, Arizona. It's kind of the pretty part of Phoenix. And, six figures, it's not as much as it used to be. And I tend to stick up for people. There tends to be a presumption that Americans all live beyond their means, and that's why they're having problems right now. But I don't necessarily think so. Some do, yes. But since, you know, 2019, January, February, March, you know, 2019, I would say our expenses are up on general like 70%, you know, some people 50, some people more, some people not as much. But
that's impossible, though, because inflation's only up 3%. How could that be?
Yeah. And the people who say that, they don't go shopping. Yeah. Or maybe they do. Maybe their staff does it for them. But yeah, so I think that this thing is, when we speak of hyperinflation, I'm not sure how to define that, but I can definitely say that we're at an inflation rate right now that even people who are doing actually quite well, they didn't think about money in the beginning of 2019. Now they're in a very tight budget and they're coming up in the negative end of the month. You know,
well, listen to this. This is kind of saying, explains exactly what you're saying. This is, and they lie to us about inflation, period. And yes, price inflation at every fast food restaurant in the U.S. has far exceeded the CPI inflation since 2014. Since 2014, prices at McDonald's have doubled, while since 2014, official inflation data shows only a 31% gain. Prices at Popeyes, Taco Bell, and Chipotle have risen by 86%, 81%, and 75% respectively, while inflation is up 31%. Now feeding a family for one meal at a fast food restaurant costs more than $50 in many cases. So, I mean, you know, that's the thing, that the CPI is lying to us. And if you go to John Williams of shadowstats.com, you will see where he says that the real inflation data is about 11%. That's using the metrics by which they were originally made before they changed them all with their hedonics to fit their inflationary agenda.
Yeah. And so I hope in listening to this, people get that confidence who in buying metals, if you're a Bitcoiner, great, you know, but if you're buying gold and silver, I think one thing is you don't have to buy an entire gold coin every month because that's a little pricey for many people. But now I think what in China, they're buying gold shot, I think little BBs of gold, and you can get gold per gram at the coin store. You can get it from you online. I believe you have smaller chunks. Silver, you know, an ounce is only what I think last time I bought it, it was 27 with the overhead. And so it's not so much about, you know, buying it all today, but like you were saying, every 2 weeks when you got paid, just, you know, a silver coin, a gram of gold, if you can afford that, or every two or every month or whatever, but you do something and don't think about like this month, but think in 10 years or something.
You let
the
laws of compounding work for you instead of against you. And we don't get any younger, and you wake up one day and you're older. And yeah, you know, it's just like anything. I'm going to start working out next week. No, you're not. Start today and then be methodical about it every day. And then by this time in 3-4 weeks, you look in the mirror, like, wow, you know, but it's more than that, of course. But the point of it is it takes a regimented, methodical, committed, and plan. Have a plan. And that plan is just pay yourself first. You deserve it. And in the end, you'll be bummed out if you didn't. And that's the hard part.
And it creates options. That's what one thing I like is when you're investing your dollars in metals, then I think in the future, if we are living through a fall of Western civilization, if we have hard times in front of us, let's say not a complete fall, but let's just say we become, rather than, I mean, if I was honest, I'd say, I think we're going from a unipolar world to a multipolar world. In fact, I think it's over. I think we are a multipolar world. And one of the things that worries me is like Gerald Celente says from a Trends Journal, when all else fails, they take you to the war. They take you to war. That might be option four. You know, you mentioned the three options. And, you know, if that was to happen, like real conflict in the Middle East, you know, he predicts like oil at $130 a barrel. So you start thinking like, well, that's the end of Western, you know, financial world. But if you did have the gold and silver you'd been collecting weekly, monthly, biweekly, you would still have something. You still have options. You still have the ability to financially survive.
Yeah, that's right. It's wealth. It's not an investment. That's the whole idea behind it. And he also says when people lose everything, they lose it. So, yes. You know, I just think you hope for the best, but in this environment, we have to also prepare for the worst, and you have to, and hope it never happens. But to not prepare in the eventuality that this kind of stuff happens, it's once in a generation, and it's very important. I mean, over the last 500 years, there's been 5 world reserve currencies, I think, and you know, they've all lasted about 100 years. We're at the tail end. We're already outlived our, most don't live more than, you know, 50 years, and we're at the tail end of our run by historical standards. To not prepare is a big mistake. Do the best you can, even if that's just a little bit each time. But you owe it to yourself to pay yourself first. That I do believe. Whether you're buying 1 ounce of silver or paying off your debt or, you know, doing whatever you can to get your personal financial house in order, every little step makes, but make sure you prioritize yourself first.
Yeah. Yeah, it reminds me of that book, Richest Man in Babylon, you know, always pay yourself. Well, you know, I've had you for a little while. I don't want to keep you all night. I know it's a lot later there. It's milesfranklin.com. And so
people who want some better prices or have questions on anything they heard, send an email at info@milesfranklin.com. Our new website is about a month away from being built, but we keep our prices, we keep our lower prices closer to the vest. And if you want to see a price list that's far better than the prices on our website that rival the very best anywhere in America, you'll send an email to info@milesfranklin.com. And, you know, Radiant Creator sent us, and we'll answer any questions you have if you have any, or want to be contacted, or just want to see the price list. And that's info@milesfranklin.com. And we'll make it a good experience. We've done this for 34 years and never had a customer complaint. And I promise you, your people won't be the first.
Yeah. Get on the VIP list. Yeah. All right. Wow. Well, thank you, Andy Schechtman, for being on the show. We've inspired people to, turn fiat into wealth and take care of themselves and plan for the future. It's just kind of like, I look at it, it's like wearing a seatbelt. I don't wear my seatbelt every day because I'm looking forward to getting in an accident. I don't even plan for it to happen, but I still wear it. I don't think about it. So when I buy my gold and silver and Bitcoin every month, I'm not planning for disaster. I'm just planning for wealth, you know? So anyway,
You don't pay your life or your home insurance, homeowner's policy, and come home and say, son of a gun, my house didn't burn down tonight. That's exactly it. And that's the best part. And I'll leave it with this, that, you know, there are very few things in the world that you can leave to your children or your grandchildren that in the year 3000, when the dollar bills that we call money right now are hanging from a frame in the Smithsonian as an example of what used to be, gold and silver, just like they have been for 5,000 years, will still be universally accepted as wealth and understood that way. And that's really what it boils down to. But when the most well-funded and well-informed traders in the world, that being the central banks, have bought more over the last 3+ years than ever before, and the numbers keep going higher, that should be all you need to know. They know the playbook. They know the end game. So, I appreciate the opportunity. It was great to be here. Happy to come back another time. And in the meantime, I hope you and everyone else out there stays well, and look forward to picking up where we left off soon.
Sounds great. Take care. Talk to you later. Bye.
You got it, brother. You too. Bye-bye.